Hello again, this is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And tonight I'm live. I've been gone. I was gone the entire month of November, and they were playing reruns out of the archives the whole time. And even when I was in Australia, people were saying, I heard you on the air last night. And I said, well, it had to have been a rerun because I was on the other side of the world. So a lot of times you can't tell if it is a part of the archives or if it's live. But tonight I'm back, and I won't be going on any more trips until February. So I'm going to be having guests, and I'll be talking live then. But anyway, so I'm going to backtrack here because tonight, the only thing I'm going to be talking about will mostly be the trip anyway, because every time I come back from one, I like to fill everybody in on what happened. I was back last Friday, I'll tell you that. I was back, but I was not back. I had just got back the day before from the long trip from the other side of the world, and the jet lag really hit me. Usually in a day or so I can recover from it, but this time it really knocked me out. So they were calling to have me on the air, and I was out of this world. So I think they must have played another archive then. But I found this time it took about at least 2 days and half of another one to come back from the jet lag. If any of you have ever been on the other side of the world, in the other hemisphere, it does make a difference. When I travel to Europe, it doesn't affect me as much as it does going down to Australia and New Zealand. You have some jet lag going back and forth, but it seems like when you go to the other hemisphere, even when I get there, you feel like you're upside down for a couple of days. Well, of course, you are upside down, but it really does make you feel disoriented. So when I go in, I like to be there a couple of days ahead of time so I can get adjusted before I have to do any talks or anything or do any work. And this time coming back, I didn't have anything planned. I just told them, no clients, nothing for the first week. But I didn't know how long it was going to take. But you come back and you feel so strange. And you find yourself, after the first few days, you find yourself waking up at strange times, wanting to sleep at strange times, and you want to eat at strange times because your body is still trying to figure out, where are you? What did you do to be now? So that happens when I go down there a lot more than it does when I go to Europe. Because you know I was in Europe the entire month of August, and then I had to go back to Moscow, but none of that bothered me as bad as this one. So, okay, I'm going to be talking about the trip and all the things that happened and kind of filling in things as we go along. If anybody out there wants to call in, it'd be okay because I don't have any guests tonight. I don't have the number right in front of me, but I think Don has it, or I think they've told you it before. Anyway, if anybody wants to call in, feel free to do it, because I'm just going to be open to anything tonight. All right, when I left the state in November, it was on Election Day. And I knew I'd be traveling the entire day, and we wouldn't have any idea who had won the election until we would get somewhere where we could watch TV. I'd already voted. I voted in early voting because I wanted to make sure I got in on this historic election anyway. But then we were on the plane. We were on our way to Australia, but I was stopping off in Hawaii first. I like to do that when I got these long trips because they're such long trips, about 12 hours. And if I can break them up in any way, I will do it. So this time we decided to stop off in Hawaii and have a class there while I was there. So we stayed there for about a week, and it was on the Big Island in Kona. I was supposed to have left the middle of October. We were going to do a class in Hong Kong, and then go on down to Taiwan, do some book signings with my Chinese publisher there. But that just didn't work out. As try as we might, we couldn't get enough people in the Chinese class to make it worth its while. So we ended up just crossing that part out. We'll probably do it eventually, but this time it just seemed like it just wasn't going to work. So we crossed that part out, and we did keep the Hawaiian part in. So I got with going into Kona. But about the election, you know, we kept wondering, I wonder how it's going, because we left early that morning, and we were not going to get, it was an 8-hour flight from Dallas to Honolulu. So we kept wondering how the election was going. Then we got into the Honolulu airport. The polls were still open there, so we thought probably nobody still knows, you know, what's going on. It was about 8 o'clock at night, I mean, 6 or 7 o'clock. I think the polls closed at 8. Anyway, we were going through customs when my granddaughter called, and she was talking, my daughter was with me. She was talking to her, and she said, well, do you want to know who won the election? And we said, well, nobody knows yet. It's too early. The polls haven't even closed over here. She said, well, yeah, it is. It's official. Do you want me to tell you? So then she told us that it was Obama. Well, you know, Hawaii is where he's from. So when we heard this, we still weren't sure. We were talking to the custom people and the people there, the guards and everything. We said, well, we just heard that Obama won. And they weren't too sure about it. And one of them went on the TV, and he began to get the news, and he came out and said, yes, it is. It's true that he did win. Everybody there was excited because he is from Hawaii. So it was announced even before the polls had closed in all of the states. But we were so excited about this because, you know, I've talked before, I was in favor of him. And I've always been against Bush and the war and all of that. Everywhere I go, I hear what people say all over the world. But this was really amazing on this trip because the response everywhere we went was just tremendous. We watched the TV the next day, and the response all over the world, this was amazing. And even when we got to Australia, the people there were so excited. They look at this as the whole opening of a whole new thing, a beginning of something. To us, that's what we felt. This is the beginning of a whole new era. We are turning everything around. And even the people in Australia said, they said, when was the last time you saw dancing in the streets over somebody, a president being elected in another country? They said it just doesn't happen, but the excitement was contagious. After I got one of my classes, one man said he was on Times Square in New York when the announcement came for the election, and he said the excitement was palpable. He said you could feel it and taste it. It was so much excitement. And I think Oprah said it best on her show. She said, the other candidates, McCain, Bush, everybody were all preaching fear, fear, fear. And now finally, she said, hope won. And that's the way I feel about it. Hope has won. I think we have turned the corner. We're headed into a whole new era. And even somebody in one of my lectures while I was in Australia asked me, he says, what do you think of Obama? Do you think he is going to help in this transition? Because I was giving the lecture about the new earth and how things are going to be changing and we're going into a whole new era. And they said, what do you think? Is he going to be part of this? See, these are unusual questions for somebody in another other country to ask. But I said, I believe it is. I believe he is the forerunner of this whole thing, and he will lead us into this new world, this new earth, the new transition into what's really coming. So it was strange. I think a lot of us will remember where we were when all of this happened. But here we were just getting off of a plane when we found out the news. So it's been quite a bit of excitement, and I was hearing it everywhere. Everyone thinks this is really something that is totally unprecedented, that this has never happened before, and they can feel it. It's historic. It really is. So anyway, but one thing that happened to me on the trip, right when I was starting out at the airport from our town, I had to fly to Dallas first and then get the Dallas plane on to Honolulu. I caught my foot, and I didn't fall, but it caught my foot and it wrenched my leg, and I tore a ligament in my knee. Oh boy, did that hurt. But I thought, well, it'll pass and I'll be fine. Then I was on the plane going down to Dallas. I got off the plane in Dallas and I couldn't walk. It was hurting so bad. So I said, now what am I going to do? I think if this would have happened before I started on the trip, I might have been saying, I can't make the trip. But it happened while you're on the trip. And you know, anybody traveler out there knows this is not the best time to have anything happen. So I got off the plane. I was trying to walk through Dallas Airport where we were going to catch the plane to go on to Honolulu. And I couldn't walk. It hurt so bad. So my daughter had to turn into caretaker. It was a good thing, I guess, I had somebody with me. I would have had to call on somebody from the airport. So she had to get a wheelchair and pushing me through the airport. Of course, I felt ridiculous, but you know, I'm in the airports constantly, all the time, and I see these people in wheelchairs, and I'm always saying, that'll never happen to me. Well, famous last words. I'm never going to say that again. Because you don't know what's going to happen to you. Things can happen on the spur of the moment. And even though they say that there is no such thing as an accident, everything happens for a reason, it was very inconvenient for it to happen right at the start of the trip. So anyway, she had to push me through the airport. And then after we even got to Honolulu, it was more wheelchairs and even in the hotel. But one thing we found is when you're in a wheelchair, you get pushed right up to the front of the line and get on first. That part was good. But it just, I'm just too active. I've got too much going on, and I really didn't like just being restricted like that. So anyway, it was the same thing. We would get to Honolulu. I had to take a small plane over to Kona because that was where they were going to have the class. We were going to stay on Kona on the Big Island. And I was trying to hobble out, you know, at the airport to get the taxi. And I just thinking, how in the world am I ever going to get through this trip? So the entire thing was like that. And we finally got to Kona, where we're going to have the class. It was a huge hotel, had two wings. The one wing that we were going to stay in was on the one end, and it was joined by the other wing by a mall, which was meant a lot of walking. The mall had 60 stores in it. They were all closed. They were blaming it on the economy. They said they used to be open, but now there were just 60 stores sitting empty. But the problem was, we're in this one wing, and where the restaurant is all the way on the other wing, which all the rooms were shut down. So we had to make it from the one wing all the way through this mall over to where the restaurant was. That meant trying to get a wheelchair from the hotel and for her to push me all that way. Then, to make it even worse, that where my class was going to be was in that other wing. So that was a lot of going back and forth and trying to maneuver all of this and being in constant pain. It was all right when you're sitting down, but when I try to get up and walk, I couldn't do it. So I did the entire class sitting there in a wheelchair and back and forth. My daughter went and got one of these leg, elastic things that you put on your knee, and that did help some. So anyway, we did the class in Kona, and we had wonderful results there. Yeah, I ended up on this trip having four classes, regular classes, and I had also my advanced classes that I was doing in Australia. So there was a lot of them. But the one in Hawaii was really interesting because it was a young man that I did for the demonstration who was working on an invention. And one of the things he wanted to know during the hypnosis was some missing parts for his invention. Well, he got all the information he needed, and it was a fantastic session. I always like it when it happens like that, that the people who are taking the class get to see what you can really use this for and what you can learn from it. So he got what he was looking for. Then we had, after I was there for about a week doing all the class and everything, then we had to head for Australia and went into Sydney, spent the night, and then on to Perth. Now, Patricia Hamilton with the Conscious Living magazine is the one who arranges all of my stuff when I go to Australia. She's real good about this. I've worked with her for about 20 years, and I've been going to her expos and working with her continually for 20 years. So she had everything all set up. When we got to Perth, I stayed the night with this one couple. And you know, nothing is ever a coincidence. My knee was still hurting. And the man where I stayed, he was a medical doctor who had got his degree because he wanted to go into natural medicine. So he was a medical doctor who was over into natural medicine. So he was looking at my knee. And what he put on my knee, I've never seen anywhere, but boy, it really worked a miracle. It was called Pain Master. It was a little tiny machine. Oh, not very big, maybe an inch and a half long. And it attaches, it comes on the skin with a, it's something like sticky. It's not quite like tape or something, but it attaches to the sticky stuff. You put it on your leg, so it attaches to your leg, has two parts, and you can use it for your back, anything where you have a sports injury or a sprain, anything, you know, with the back or anything where you're having any kind of pain, any joints or anything. And he put it on both sides of where the injury was. And it lit up some little tiny red light. And he said it uses the natural electrical system of the body. And it sends little tiny pulses of electricity through the affected part. And I'd never seen anything like this. And I said, well, what is it going to feel like? He said, you won't even feel it. It's so tiny. The little pulses that it sends through are tiny. And it sends electrical pulses through the affected area, and it relieves the pain, it stops the pain immediately, and also it regenerates the tissue in the affected part to where you rebuild the cells and regenerates the tissue. So it heals it much faster. So this is the answer. You don't have to use drugs or anything, no pain medicine or anything. Something like this is the answer. And you know, the people who listen to the show know that I'm always an advocate for natural healing and alternative healing, because I'm working with doctors all over the world in this field. So this is another example of the things you can do without drugs and pain medication and surgery and all the other things that they're always trying to push on you. And so I left this on. He said just to take it off, you to take a shower and then put it right back on. I lived it on the entire time I was over there and in Australia. And I watched it every day as it got better and better, to where by the end of my trip, I was totally pain-free. Of course, I was gone a month. But I would say by the beginning of the third week, everything had got pretty much back to normal. I was still favoring it because I didn't want to strain it. But I think it's amazing that we have these things and we don't even know about them. I'm going to look it up on the internet so I can get some to have in case something like this happens again, hopefully not. Or my daughter sometimes has troubles with her back, she could use it for that. But it was called Pain Master. I thought it was from Australia, but on the box it says it is made in the U.S. So I bet it is on the internet. And I found out later that he gave me the last one that he had, and he was going to have to try to get some more. But this is something that can be used out there if you have some kind of an injury or a sprain to help with that. So anyway, then I was going to have my class. Everywhere that I went, I was gone. This was 3 weeks. I was a whole month, but the 1 week in Hawaii, then I was a week in Perth, a week in Sydney, and a week in Wellington. So when I get there and I'm talking about the class that she has arranged, at first she was saying there was going to be about 60 people. When we got there, the numbers were growing, and she said, we ended up with 91 people in the class I did in Perth. And she told me there was going to be 91 people. I was a little intimidated. Thinking, how am I going to teach that many people? The biggest classes I've had before have been between 30 and 40. I like to keep the classes small enough so we can have interaction with the students and they can ask questions. And it's on more of a more personal level. But she said it just kept growing and growing. And even after the class started, they had people calling and wanting to know if they could get in. But by that time, we'd already begun. But anyway, when on all these places, Patricia had first arranged a lecture. That would be the first thing I would do when I would get there. So the first thing I had to do when I got to Perth was a lecture at the university. She had reserved the place. And they had to wheel me on stage with the wheelchair. And I explained to them what had happened because I felt ridiculous to come out that way, but I didn't have any choice. Wheeled me on stage with the wheelchair. We completely filled the auditorium at the university. It was a huge crowd. And it was a tremendous way to kick off this entire tour. Well, in addition to my regular class, I decided to do something that I've never done before. I wanted to have an advanced class because people kept telling me there must be more you can teach us. And I tell them that during the class, I can't show you everything. It's impossible. It would overwhelm you. I try to teach in my classes the basics of how to do what I do step by step. And I don't want to give them too much at one time, but I've always told them I have a whole bag of tricks that I can use if I need to. And they keep saying, well, when are you going to share this with us? So when I was making arrangements to go to Australia, Patricia said, why don't you do it over here? Because I gave 5 classes in Australia last year, Australia, New Zealand. We had a lot of students that had taken the class. So I said, all right, I'm going to do what I call a level 2 class, an advanced class, a level 2, where I'll show them the other parts that we didn't get in the first one. So after the lecture, the next day, I did my advanced class, the level 2. The ones who requirement was they had to have already had the class before and been working at it and trying to use it. So this was interesting because I found out, I didn't know how I was going to do it. I got there and I told him, I said, I have no idea how I'm going to do this. I've never done it before. The first thing I wanted to know was feedback from them. The ones who are practicing it, the ones that are doing it, are you having any difficulties? Are you having any questions? So it was really good. They were having a lot of feedback and talking about each other. You know, this is what I found. This is what I, the other ones say, this is the way I did it. I had problems in this area. Because, you know, when I first started to do these classes back in 2002, I felt pushed to do it. And they, and you know who I mean by they kept saying, you must teach, you have to teach. And I kept saying, how am I going to teach something that I invented, that I developed? I know how I do it, but how am I going to show other people how to do it? Can you show somebody else something that you have figured out? And I wasn't sure. So I'm always interested in getting feedback, and we get lots of emails from people telling me what's happened to them, the results they are having, and they always asking for advice. We have a very good support system. Any student who is having a problem or has questions can email us, and we will try our best to help them. So that's why this was important, that I was getting feedback from these people to find out, is it working when somebody else is trying? Can they get the same results that I get? Because I see miracles every day in my office. I see what happens when the person is healed instantly. And to me, this is so miraculous. So I wanted to know how they were doing it. So this is what they were talking about. One woman said even on her very first case that she did when she tried this technique, had a miraculous healing. The man who came in had a deep wound on his foot. You said you could see all the way down into the muscles, and they were going to operate on it to close it up. It was big. It was a big, almost like his foot was sliced open. So she said as she did the technique, contacted the subconscious the way I teach to do it, and asked it, how to do the healing. And the subconscious always takes over and does the healing. When she got to that part, the practitioner is not doing it. I don't do it. They don't do it. We are the facilitator. And I teach them how to contact this power that I call the subconscious, which is really like the oversoul, the higher self, and let it come through the person and do the healing. She said when she followed the step-by-step instructions, she watched the foot, she watched the skin and the muscles and everything close back up all by itself. She said it was amazing to see it happen. It just all closed up all by itself, sealed itself over. That meant no operations. So this is, to me, is exciting to hear these things happen. And I shared with them an email that I got from another one of my students, who said they had a client who was a man who had had a knee operated on, and it had been, two or three years before. But he was still in a lot of pain. The operation had not solved the problem. He had difficulty walking. He had difficulty at his job because he was still in a lot of pain, and the knee was still real bad. So she did the technique, called in the subconscious, and she said she watched as it looked like something was moving underneath the skin by the knee as it manipulated and moved it around, and it healed it. And she said after the session was over, the man said he was walking up and down steps, he had no more pain, and he'd gone back to work and working longer hours to make up for the hours that he had missed, the work he had missed. So I was sharing that email with the people, and I was hearing time and time again from other ones who were having similar results with the healings. Of course, other ones are working on the therapy part, trying to help the people with the counseling. But some of them had not got really into the healing yet. But at least they were starting. They were trying. That was the important part. The idea was to give them confidence. Sometimes they do a couple of sessions, and they're not getting the results. They think it's not working, and they stop. But I tell them at the end of every class, you must go out now and practice, practice, practice. You can't take any class and expect to be an expert in it right away. It doesn't work that way. You have to try it. You have to use it. You have to track it on as many people as you can. And sure, you may have some failures in the beginning till you get confident in what you're doing. Then it becomes easier and easier, and you know how to use this. So the idea was to give these people encouragement, and hearing it from the other students makes a big difference. It does work. They just have to go out and try it, not give up too quickly. So we had, it was supposed to be a 3-4 hour class, and it turned into 6 hours. As I shared some more techniques with them, and how to deal with difficult cases, because everybody can be hypnotized. There are no exceptions. You just have to work a little harder on the more difficult cases. So that's what I was doing in the advanced class, was sharing this with people, the students. So it's going to be a permanent thing now, I guess, because I had it everywhere I went, and I'm going to be doing it in the States this next year, 2009. Because people are saying, when can we take the advanced class? It's just the one day. And now we found out we're going to have to allow 5 or 6 hours anyway. So it means it's going to be a day count class. Because there's a lot more to cover than I thought there would be. So anyway, it's growing. Anyway, everything is growing. So after I did the advanced class, then the next day I had to begin the 3-day class. 91 people. And I said, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? Well, I decided to do it just like I do any other class. I got up there and just taught it the way I do all of them. You do the same thing as when you're facing a whole auditorium full of people. You pick out a few faces in the audience and focus on them. And sometimes you ignore the rest of the people unless somebody asks a question. But that's the only way you can do it. Otherwise, it is intimidating. But they told me later it didn't matter if there were that many people. They were all getting something out of it. Only problem was whenever we have the break, you know, you have to have bathroom break, and they have tea break and a bathroom break, and you get all these people. Go hard out of the room is how you're going to get them back in again, because I told them, it's like a expression we use here in Arkansas. I said, somebody opened the gate and all the cows got out. So I said, now we got to get all the cows back in the pasture again. So every time we would have a break, we'd have to round everybody up and get them back into the room so we could continue with the class. But it turned out a lot better than I thought. And I thought, boy, I feel sorry for my office when I get back, because they got to make out all these certificates that we have to send to the people. So that was the first time I've done that big of a class. And Patricia, the one with the Conscious Living magazine, right after it was over, she said, you have just taken this to a new level. That this is what it's going to be. We're going to have more and more people in these classes wanting to learn. And I've always said it takes the same amount of energy to teach a small class as it does a large class. So it won't bother me at all if the classes get bigger. I can teach more people. It's just, some of people feel they get lost in the shuffle when you have a larger class. But I think with this support group that we've set up and the level 2 classes, and we're going to have interaction with these people, I think it'll be easier. they'll be able to have contact with me, and if you have questions. So even if the class is large, I think it's going to work. So anyway, after Perth, then I had to go down to Sydney, do the same thing all over again in Sydney. The lecture, the level 2 class, and then the 3-day class. And in Sydney, we had more of a normal 5 classes. I think it was over 30 people, which was more normal. And at both places, we were having really good sessions. One thing here again, I always like to have feedback on what happens to the people that I work with. Last year, when I did the class in Sydney, we had a young man who came, and he flew over from New Zealand. And I didn't know who he was. He was just one of the class. I think we had about between 30 and 40 people last year. And I never know who I'm going to do for my demonstration until I get there. Sometimes I have somebody come up and want to volunteer. I like to help have somebody that has a problem or somebody who needs help. If we're going to do it, we might as well do something that's going to help somebody, not just have it out of curiosity. So I never really know. Sometimes I look around the room and I get a feeling about someone that maybe they're the one I'm supposed to work with. I always say they lead me in the right direction to the person I'm supposed to do the demonstration on. This young man was sitting in the back of the room with pillows and things, and he was very tall. He was well over 6 foot tall, young man, only in his 30s, and he's very good looking, and I just kind of kept noticing him, but I hadn't said anything to him. And it was coming up to the time I was going to have to make my decision on who am I going to do for the demonstration. So I went up to him during one of the breaks, and I said, you know, I keep having this feeling I should ask you, do you want to be the demonstration for the class? And he was so excited. He was coming unglued. He said, you don't know. He said, what's been happening here? He said he had come all the way from New Zealand. He had really wanted a private session, but I was booked solid, and I was doing the classes. When I'm doing the classes, I can't see private clients, and I didn't have any time. So he had flown all the way under the hope that he would be the demonstration. He said, I didn't really care about taking the class. It was just maybe you might pick me. But he hadn't said anything to me. So it ended up, he had a very bad back, and he was scheduled for back surgery. So that alone would have been hard to make the trip. But he said that the main culprit was his job. He hated his job. He was into something that he really didn't like. And it was in the middle of all of that is when his back went out, and he was in terrible pain. He got to where he couldn't walk. And I believe at that time, somewhere in there, he had to go back to his parents' house and stay because he had, couldn't take care of himself. And he went to the doctor, and they told him, well, you're going to have a back operation. There's no way you can get out of this otherwise, as he was in terrible pain. Well, he didn't want to have the operation, and it eased up a little bit. So he went back to work, even though he was in pain, but it didn't heal it. He went back to work, and after a little bit, it went out again. And the doctor said in the meantime, well, we can postpone it. It went out again. This time it was really bad. And they were telling him, if you don't have the back surgery, we're going to have to amputate your leg. Now, other doctor friends of mine have told me, if we don't use fear, the patient isn't going to do what we tell them to do. You have to scare them to make them do what you want them to do. But I think he must have meant that the spine, with the vertebrae when they'd gone out, were pressing on the nerves to the leg, and that it would eventually have to be amputated. I think that was what he was indicating. Well, the young man, of course, didn't want the surgery, and he didn't know what to do. So he flew all that way under the hope that he could have the session. So talk about motivation. So we had the demonstration. We had it on a massage table, had them bring it in and set it up. He was so tall, he hung off the end of the table, and we did the demonstration. And during the demonstration, we found the answer to all of it. I don't remember what it was, the past life and everything. But the young man was really interested in art and painting. That's what he really wanted to do. He didn't want this job that he hated. It was some kind of a business job. He didn't want that. He wanted to paint. He wanted to, in art, that was his passion. But of course, there's no money in that. So he had to stay with this job that he was unhappy with. That all came out, that he had to do what he really wanted to do, or he'd never be happy. Well, the subconscious went in there and did the healing, and it always sends energy through the back. And sometimes I've seen people jump and jolt, you know, convulse with the energy goes through them like electricity. It's amazing to watch it happen as the repairs are made. And the subconscious says, some say different things. Sometimes it'll say it's sending light to the affected part. Sometimes it's sending electrical charges and energy. But, you know, so I was thinking it was funny with that little electrical thing I had on my knee. I'm using the same electrical system that probably the subconscious is. It's directing the same natural thing to the point of injury, the point that needs fixing. And I have, when I've worked on people that have bad backs, I've even heard the bones popping and cracking as they're pushed back into place. And I know that people could hear it on the tapes afterwards. And I always ask them, what is that? What are you doing? And they'll say, well, we're just realigning it. We're putting the bones back the way they're supposed to be. As it pops and cracks and goes back into place. Anyway, the young man, they finished with him. When he came out of the trance, he got up and he was so excited. He was walking and running all around the room. He said, I don't hurt, I don't hurt. And it was amazing to see it happen. But then there was a little more to the story that happened afterwards. And this is what I explained to the people in the advanced class in Sydney because they didn't know the rest of the story. We always have a break after the demonstration, and then we come back after lunch and finish the rest of the day. That's the last day of the class. And when we came back, there was a man on the other side of the room. And as we were finishing up, I saw him slump forward in his chair. And I didn't know what it was, you know, what was the matter. And we're finishing the class and everybody's leaving. And he said he went down to the taxi and then he noticed he'd forgot his notes. So he came back up to the room to get the notes. So it was just me and him and Patricia were the only ones that were in the room. And he said, I've got to tell you what happened. He said he also had a bad back. His back had been so bad, even though he was in business and he had to go to corporate meetings, apply everywhere, his back was so bad that sometimes he would have to do the meeting lying down. And he had to fly in first class because he had to fly down. So his back was terrible. So he said, this was after we had completed the first healing on the man, and we were just talking to the class. He said as he sat there, he felt a jolt like electricity shoot down his back. And that was when he slumped forward. Well, he said, I have to tell you, I went down to the taxi, and that's when I noticed, he said, my back wasn't hurting anymore. He said, it's gone. I said, what's going on here? Was they still in the room? Was the energy still in the room, alive and circulating around the room, or what? And then did it just decide, okay, let's just zap him? Because that's the first time I've ever seen it happen like that. Other people have said maybe he was silently wishing, I wish that could have been me. And maybe they caught on to that, but they zapped him. And the bolt of electricity went down his spine, and he was healed instantly right there in the room. So I thought that was remarkable. And we saw him again this year, and he is fine. So there's more at work here than we realize. There's a lot more happening when we're doing these sessions than I can even realize. And when I got to New Zealand, I met a man there who knew the young man who I'd used for the demonstration, the one with the first one with the bad back. And he told me, oh, yeah, I know him. And he said, this is a year later. And he says, he's living in Hawaii now, doing what he always wanted to do. And his back is fine. So this is what I always say. You find the cause. You find the reason. You find out what's happened, what's causing this. And it'll go away. Because that's what I found. Every ache, pain, symptom of the body is the subconscious trying to give you a message, trying to tell you something. The only way it knows how, with pain. The ideal state of the body should be perfect health at all times. Any ache, pain, or symptom is trying to give you a message, trying to tell you something. Of course, most of the time we don't understand what it's trying to tell us. Or we ignore it, well, then it gets worse because the subconscious is still trying to tell you something, trying to get your attention the only way it knows how, so it makes it a little worse and a little worse. You still don't understand, then it can get to a point where it will get turned into a disease, an illness, have to cause surgery. We don't want it to get to that point. We try to stop it before it gets to the point of having an operation. Because you find out why, what it's trying to tell you, it goes away instantly. Because why should the subconscious keep trying to give you a message once you have received it and understood it? Then you know what it's all about and it goes away. You have found the cause. You've got to find the cause because you make yourself sick. And people argue with me, what do you mean? I don't want to be sick. But your mind is that powerful to make yourself sick. It's also powerful enough to heal you once you find out what is the cause. Why am I doing this to myself? Then it becomes crystal clear. People come into my office all the time. And they start talking about aches and pains in their body. And it's as though they become transparent. Because the subconscious is very literal. It will always affect the same part of the body when it's trying to give you the same message through all of these people I work with. So it's trying to tell you something. They become transparent. And they start talking about their aches and pains. And you can know immediately what's going on in their lives right now. Because this is the part of the body that's being affected to tell you something. It's the same thing as Louise Hay in her books where she talks about what's the body trying to tell you. There's other books out there along the same line, too, that your body does not lie. It's trying to tell you something. People say, I don't have any problems. I don't know what you mean. And I said, well, then why are you getting ready for heart surgery? Why are these things happening to you? No, your body doesn't lie. There's something else going on in your life. Now, Louise Hay and the rest of them, we're all finding the same information. We're just getting it from different ways. We're finding it in different directions. But I think that gives it more validity. If we're all coming up with the same information from different sources and we're having the same results, I think that gives it a lot of validity. There's a lot more to this than people think. This is why I'm teaching this now all over the world, and we are teaching doctors, and we're teaching it at the college, and I'm going to be working in Moscow with the academy over there. They're all saying this is the therapy of the future. We've got to change the way people think and the way they look at all of this. So that's what I'm doing. I am traveling all the time now, teaching this everywhere I go. And I think that's important. We're beginning to open up people's minds to see there's a lot more to this. Ordinary hypnosis can't do this. This is something very different that I had to discover myself. Took 30 years of discovering it, finding out how to contact this part, this power, whatever you want to call it, and how to perfect it to where I could teach it. And now I know it works because I've seen thousands and thousands of clients, and now I'm hearing from those people who have taken the classes, they're getting the same results. So to me, this is fantastic. It means we have hit on something that is very valuable and something that people need to know. That's why I'm going to continue teaching this everywhere. And after Sydney, after doing the same routine again, you know, lecture, advanced class, and then the regular class, then I went on to Wellington in New Zealand. I have wonderful, wonderful friends in New Zealand. They always set everything up for us over there. There again, it was the same thing, the lecture and the advanced class and the regular class. This time, my lecture was with Blair Styra, and he's also an old friend. I've worked with him when I go over there. We do joint lectures together. He is an absolutely wonderful person, a real, I don't know what you call him, psychic or channeler. He is a channeler, but he's more than that. He channels an entity called Tabash, and the entity is very, very accurate. And he's what they call a waking channeler because he can get up and walk around with his eyes open and communicate with people. I had him on my show, and also he does hundreds and hundreds of private sessions too. But every time I've gone to New Zealand, we have a joint lecture together. I do my lecture, and then he goes into his where he allows Tabash to come through him. And Tabash is an entertaining personality. He has a wonderful personality. He takes over and does the lecture. He even sings. And the people just love him in New Zealand. This is Blair Styra. So if anyone wants to contact him, well, he has a website, but I was thinking if you really want to contact him, you can call our office and we'll tell you how to get in touch with him. But we had the lecture with him, and it was absolutely wonderful. We had about, between 200 and 300 people in the audience. We filled this entire room, and they just love him over there. So we did that, and then I did the two classes. Then I'm getting ready to come home because I've been gone a long time. But I still had to go to Auckland on the way. So we flew into Auckland, got there, and did one final lecture that night for Patricia in Auckland. And then we were done. And I said, finally, I'm finished. I'm finished. I can go home. And then the next morning, we left for the 12-hour flight back to Arkansas, but we first to L.A., and then you got 3 hours on to Dallas, et cetera, et cetera. That's why when I got back, I was just engulfed with jet lag. So anyway, that's the story of my last month here. But on the trip, in Perth, we had people fly down from Japan, Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, because it's close on that side of the world to take the class. And some of the people there from Japan want me to go to Japan and do the classes there. So we're going to try to work that in next year, because they also want me to go to India and do the classes, and you know I'm going back to Russia, to Moscow. So we're going to have to try to work this out. And everywhere in Australia, they said, you got to come back. You got to come back. The ones that took this class want to take the advanced class next year. I don't know how we're going to do it. It'll be a challenge, but we're going to have to try to work all these countries in so I can do it next year. Right now, I'm not going to do any more trips until maybe February, maybe March, who's to say, but I get to spend Christmas at home anyway. Finally. So next week, I'm not going to do a live show because it's Christmas. We're going to replay a show that I did when I first went on the air 3 years ago. It's been 3 years now that I've been with BBS Radio. One of the very beginning shows I did was The Star of Bethlehem, the story that was told in my book, Jesus and the Essenes, about the Star of Bethlehem. Everybody loves that tape, so they're going to play that again next Friday, just before Christmas. And after that, I'm going to be back on. I'm going to have guests, and so it'll be live until I go out on trips again. So anyway, if anybody wants to know anything about my schedule, about the classes, we are signing up now for March. And we're going to have an advanced class, and we're going to have my record class in Arkansas in March. If you're interested in the classes or sessions or anything, contact my website, www.ozarkmountain.com, name of my company. It's abbreviated, OZARKMT.com. Or if you're overseas, it's OZARKMT.com. Or you can call our 800 number, 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045 to find out any more information. Right now, my office is setting up a chat room for all those who have taken the class. If they want to have interaction between each other, we're signing people up for that now, where we're going to have an ongoing support group and a chat room and talk group, and we're already getting a lot of the students who are interested in this. So if you're interested in that, also contact the office or the website. Okay, there's a lot going on. So it's time for me to sign off. Everybody have a Merry Christmas, and I hope everybody is healthy out there. Oh, that's another shock. I came back and it's winter. Over there it's summer. I come back here, it's winter. So anyway, everybody have a Merry Christmas, and good night to everyone, and thanks for listening.